Welcome to the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis.
And Matt Enders.
This is episode 5. We are trunking along. So we got a lot of feedback today. We talked about our show during the MD Lug meeting. That's the Metro Detroit Linux Users Group.
Woo!
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for being here and listening in. So we got the biggest things for feedback people were talking about is getting some intro music. Or some kind of announcement for the intro and then for each section. Apparently, we're not exciting enough to say it ourselves.
And you can understand why.
Yeah.
Having listened to us.
With that out of the way, let's head on to kernel news.
All right. The current development kernel is 3.2-RC1. It was released on November 7th. People should use it and bang on it hard. There shouldn't be anything big and ugly hiding in there, but there is a huge amount of stuff in there. Stable updates. The 2.6.32.47 and 2.6.33.20 stable updates were released on November 7th. Both contain a long list of important fixes. 2.6.32.48 was released on November 8th to fix some build problems introduced in the 2.6.32.47. The 2.6.33 users should note that the 2.6.33.20 is the final planned update for that kernel. Move on. Get 3.0. Come on. The second half of the 3.2 merge window. On November 7th, Linus announced that the 3.2-RC1 release, which closed the merge window. During the 2 weeks that the window was open, 10,214 non-merge change sets were pulled into the mainline kernel, making this the most active merge window ever, beating out the previous record holder, which was the 2.6.30, and it had 9,603 change sets. So it beat it by quite a bit. Some of the user-visible changes merged this week were processes can now use poll on files under procsys. That's /proc/sys. The result is the ability to get a notification when a specific syscontrol parameter changes. The ButterFS file system now records a number of previous tree routes, which can be useful in recovering damaged file systems. ButterFS also has gained improved read-ahead support. The IOLIS dirty throttling patch has been merged. That should improve write-back performance for a number of workloads. Even though this development cycle was so huge, several trees did not get pulled in. Linus intentionally avoided some controversial ones, like front swap and the KVM tool. Others were simply passed over. It is time for this code to stabilize. If things progress in the usual manner, then the 3.2 release should be seen sometime in January. That's it for the kernel news this week.
All right. You know, I was thinking about the other day, the kernel news, or the kernel release numbers. Didn't they at one point say, like, all odd number releases are...
That used to be under the old way they developed the kernel, where they had the production kernel and the development kernel.
Yeah.
Like, so the last time that was done was, production was 2.5. The release kernel was 2.5, and the production kernel was 2.4. Then when they released 2.5, I'm sorry, the production kernel was 2.4, and the one they were working on, the development kernel, was 2.5. And then when they released 2.5 as 2.6,
yeah,
they changed how they did it at that point, and there is no longer a development kernel. They're doing the development on the current kernel, and they just keep it in a separate tree.
Oh, I see. Is that when he moved over to Git?
I believe it was also the same time he moved to Git, yes.
Yeah.
Or he may have moved to Git just before that because the CVS, I don't remember the old repository system they were using, but those people torqued him off.
Yeah.
And so that's why he wrote and moved to Git. So.
Okay, yeah, he created Git, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool. It's one of those scratch-your-own-itch type thing, huh?
Well, yeah, and because, I mean, it's basically, it was a proprietary system they were using, and they were just letting the Linux kernel use it free of charge.
Oh.
And so that's why another reason they moved to the Git, which is GPL.
Oh, okay.
Which now I also like to see a lot of other projects have switched over to Git. So
they have, yeah. It's very common now. I've even heard some of the open source writers, the journal or novelists, are starting to use Git for that, and then people can just grab whatever they're writing at the time to get their latest version of their novel.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty nifty.
Yeah, one of the guys in Linux Outlaws, yeah. He's doing that. He's there. Apparently, there's some sort of contest or writing thing for that. They write like 5,000 words in a month or something like that. And last I saw, he was up to like 1,400.
And how far was he into the month?
First week.
Okay.
So he was on track.
1,400 words, and he's on his second month.
Yeah. Anyway, cool. Is that it for your...
That was it for the kernel, baby.
Sweet. All right, so going on to distro news. So, as you've seen in the past, most of our news we get for distro releases have been from DistroWatch. But the first one I have on here was released on Friday, 11/11/11. And it wasn't posted on DistroWatch. So Parted Magic 11/11/11 was released on Friday. It's based on the Linux 3.1 kernel. The new release introduces a new versioning system. The previous version was 6.7. And it also upgrades a number of included applications. It looks pretty good, the Parted Magic. They use GNOME. It looks like GNOME for their... Or is it not?
Did they recently do that? Because I use Parted Magic a lot, but it's an old CD. I mean, it works, so I obviously don't use a new one. I haven't downloaded and burned a new one because it works. But, and you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Right.
But anyway, it's some type of an XFC. It's some real minimalistic interface is what the one I'm using uses.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at a screenshot of that. It does look like that. But they're using the gparted, which is the GNOME partition editor.
Right.
And that's probably where I thought of GNOME. But they also include Firefox 8, GPFDisk.
On the gparted disk?
Yeah.
My gparted disk doesn't do anything but gparted.
Oh, no. This isn't gparted disk. This is parted magic.
Oh, okay.
So it has gparted and then other tools. It also has ClamAV on there.
Oh, no, I don't use that then. I use the gparted live run disk is what I use.
Right, yeah, and I use that too. That's nice. Yeah, so other releases for this week is Sabian Linux 7, which is experimental. Three experimental versions of Sabian Linux 7 containing the LXDE desktop environment, Enlightenment 17, and the awesome Window Manager.
It's called the Awesome Window Manager.
It is.
That's funny.
Yeah. So Sabian, I haven't really done anything with that before.
I have never done anything with it. But I'm looking here, and did we miss, because you started with Sabian, which was on 11.10?
Oh, I was working backwards this time.
Okay.
I should start the other way. Okay, we'll go back. So on 11.7, Fondue.
Fuduntu? How would you say that?
Yeah, Fuduntu. You're right. 14.12. It's a Linux distribution recently forked from Fedora. So what I was reading on that is it's their goal was to make something, a mix between Fedora and Ubuntu. And I don't know how they can do that. You know,
One's Debian-based, the other's RPM-based. I mean...
Yeah. So I'm thinking they probably stuck with the RPM-based and trying to...
Give it an Ubuntu look or what? Look and feel?
I don't know.
They're also going to switch to the crappy Unity? I mean, come on, what?
I think it's GNOME 3, but, you know, I haven't gotten really into reading about that because I thought, you know, what? Mixing those two? Anyway. CD Linux was also released. It's 0.9.7. It's a compact mini live CD featuring the XFCE desktop and a handful of other popular applications. Also, Fedora 16 was released. Obviously, everybody knows it's sponsored by Red Hat. Oracle Solaris 11 was released.
Now, is that open source now? Are they totally open source Solaris? There's no more open Solaris than Solaris? How's that working?
That's a good question. I do not know. I'm reading this. They're saying it's the operating system originally developed by Sun Microsystems, also known for its scalability and I can't read it. Right. Enterprise stuff. I don't think this is the open version. But it's free for download. So just because it's free doesn't mean it's open source.
Right.
Right. So I can't tell you either way. We do encourage users to let us know.
Yeah, let us know. Hey, because I have a Sunbox that currently has no OS on it. And it also has no drive in it. That's probably why it has no OS on it. But I'm going to drop a drive in it and throw... I was going to probably throw Open Solaris on it, but I might try the regular Solaris and just see how that...
Yeah, Solaris 11. Yeah, you know, I thought of your system. But I don't know if... Because that's an ancient computer. I don't know if this would run on
it. It is a little old. It may run. I mean, there's no graphs. Solaris doesn't have a graphical environment, do they?
No, but it's still... It's like a 133 processor you have on that. Or maybe it's a 400. But
I don't know. I forget. It's been a long time since I looked at it.
Oh, man.
And it takes a SCSI drive. So, hey, if anybody out there wants to donate is it wide SCSI? What was it?
It is wide SCSI.
Okay, yeah.
So actually, I have one if you want it.
Oh, yes. So I would appreciate that.
47 gig.
That would be a good thing.
Yeah. And then we're back to Sabian and Parted Magic. There's a couple development releases.
Yeah, like the one you already mentioned for Fedora. Not Fedora. I'm sorry. CD Linux.
Oh, that is a development. Oh, I thought that was just... Oh, man. It was a busy week this week. I was trying to cram in all my stuff. Anyways, another development release that I saw was very interesting is the Commodore OS Vision. It's in beta right now. But they announced the availability of a public release for the Commodore OS Vision, a Linux Mint-based distribution created for the Commodore enthusiasts and Commodore USA hardware, such as the Commodore 64, the VIC series, and the upcoming high-performance line of Amiga computers.
Amiga.
So I is an E?
Yeah, it's Amiga.
Amiga.
Gary runs him. He's got all that old Amiga hardware that he runs still in his office. Yeah.
You know, I remember a couple of years ago at PangoCon, Ray brought in an Amiga, or did Gary
bring it
in?
I think it was Gary, because Gary's the big Amiga guy.
Yeah, and then Ray got Debian running on it, I think it was.
Did he?
Yeah.
I don't know, I didn't really pay too much attention.
Couldn't do a whole lot, because there was no wired network connection, but it was still fun.
And they're basing it on Mint?
Yeah.
Are they basing it on, like, Mint Ubuntu, or Mint Debian, or...
All it says is Mint. I'm assuming Ubuntu.
Now, we all know that doesn't matter which Mint you're running, it's all got that minty goodness. So, in the news this week, there's a couple of things that I ran across that I thought were pretty interesting. First is the Mint people have finally got a preview out of Mint 12, codenamed Lisa. Even though they stuck with Genome 2 in their last release, they realized that this is not a workable situation, so they are moving to Genome 3 and Mint 12 with some fantastic add-ons. The good things about Genome 3 are, most importantly, it is shiny. Then, it is also elegant, modern, and sleek. However, there are also some problems. It changes the way people use their computers. We are currently used to working in a task-centric environment, but in Genome 3, we are asked to switch to an application-centric environment. In other words, switching between applications instead of windows. It does not do multitasking well, as you can't see open windows or the system tray icons, among other things. The Mint guys have come up with an excellent solution. They have developed a way for you to interact with your computer the way you want to, the traditional way and the new way. So they developed MGSE, which stands for Mint Genome Shell Extensions. Love that minty goodness. It is a desktop layer that rides on top of Genome 3. We have used the traditional desktop for as long as there have been graphical environments with things like application menus and window lists. They may have looked different depending on whether you were using Genome, KDE, XFCE, Mac, or Windows, but they all share these familiar components. With MGSE, you can choose how much or how little of the traditional or new interface you use. With this, you can ease yourself into the new way or keep right on using your desktop the way you always have. The main features of MGSE are the bottom panel, the application menu, the window list, a task-centric desktop, visible system tray icons. Genome 3 requires video acceleration, which most modern systems have. They do have a fallback mode if your hardware is not compatible. Even though it resembles Genome 2, do not be confused. It has nothing to do with Genome 2, and it will eventually disappear as Genome 3 progresses. They're also adding Mate as an option. Mate is a fork of Genome 232, and works exactly like Genome 2, as you can't run both Genome 2 and Genome 3 on the same machine, as it causes many conflicts in the repositories. Mate is supposed to solve this, and allow both to be installed on the same system. In reality, though, there are many conflicts between Mate and Genome 3. The Mint team is working diligently in collaboration with the Mate team to correct these and allow Mate to be installed by default along with Genome 3. For the full story, see the Linux Mint blog post at blog.linuxmint.com/P=1851. The RC version was released on 11/12 for an expected full release on 11/20.
Nice. So you can make GNOME 3 look like GNOME 2?
You can. They developed a layer that will ride between you and GNOME 3 that will make it, if you turn everything in GNOME 3 off, it'll look and work exactly like GNOME 2.
Cool. So. Yeah, and there's a lot of people who are complaining because GNOME 3 didn't have that available, and they were like freaking out. And so this is a good option.
It is excellent. Option. And it's just another thing that's going to drive those numbers for Mint way up and make it uncatchable by any other distribution in that number one slot.
Yeah. I wonder if this is something you're going to be able to install on other operating systems that have GNOME 3.
Because it's just an extension system. Because it was written by them. But I don't know how you could make it Mint specific. You know, it would be Genome specific, obviously. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to release it. Are they even going to release it? So,
I don't know.
Or would you have to get Mint and reverse engineer the binary out of Mint? Or
I don't see. I mean, they're going to, if it's going to be released under the GPL, it has to have that available, right?
If they give it a GPL license, nobody says they have to give it a GPL license. Right?
Yeah. I mean, that kind of goes against the whole Linux and open source, but
I mean, but you know, lots of things do that because it makes their distribution distinct. Then, if you want the MGSE, you have to use Mint.
Yeah. So. All right. Yeah. Well, I've got a little bit about Ubuntu. Sean Powers from the Linux Journal. He has this little post on there: stop installing outdated Ubuntu. Which outdated is a relative term. I think he's referring to don't install like a 2-month-old or 3-month-old CD and then have to go through and install all the updates.
Yep, the 50,000 updates or however many have been.
Yeah, so his option or explanation how to do this is to use the minimal CD. So you download this 20 meg minimal CD and then you can install it from any net source. So if you have your own repository in your house, you can install it, and it installs really fast because you're on 100 meg connection. Or you can choose from any of the other sources out there, you know, the main one or whatever's closest to you. And then it pulls all the latest updates. You can install...
So it's kind of like a Debian net install CD.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also gives you the option to install any of the Ubuntu versions. So, yeah, like Ubuntu, Kubuntu, and all the other specialized Ubuntus. Yeah, it sounds interesting.
Which would be unlike an OpenSUSE net install CD, which I used one time on my son's laptop because he wanted to put, God knows why, but he wanted to put OpenSUSE on there. So I used the OpenSUSE net install CD to put it on there, figuring when I'm done, I'll be like a Debian net install and everything will be current. No. Still had to run all the updates, download the 37,000 updates, and it was a mess. So.
Jeez.
Why would you have a net install CD that pulled down old packages? I just don't get it.
I don't get it either. You know what we'd missed was the distros of the week.
Oh, we did.
And I'm checking to see if there's any changes in the last few days. But, it's looking fast today. Mint's still number one. Fedora's number two. OpenSUSE's three. Ubuntu's four. And Fuduntu is 5. Wow, kicked Debian off of number 5 spot.
That's just because they had a release.
Yeah. Fedentu. That's strange. I should look into that a little bit more and see what's up with that.
And what'd they beat it by? They beat it by 200 page hits? Not even 200 page hits. 101 page hits. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, you Debianers out there. We can't let Fedentu stay ahead of us like that. It's just bullshit.
And Debian's even up for the month or the week.
Yeah, Debian's up, and so is Fedentu. But Ubuntu's on its way down. Oh, surprising. Let's just jam Unity down everybody's throat, and they'll all love us. Yeah, right.
The new updates to Unity isn't bad.
Yeah.
I started using it and liking it. A lot of the limitations that you have from the Ubuntu 11.4 that Unity had there, they've added a lot more things and more of those lenses for each of the page. But I really want to look into using GNOME 3, so maybe that's what I'm going to start doing. Anyway, so some more of the tech news. You found a couple of things you want to talk about, Matt?
Sure. I'm looking at the website. It's not posted yet. Well, it'll be posted by the time you hear this, but it's not posted right now. And I'm also looking at my actual notes, and it doesn't look like my BlackBerry stuff made it to the web.
Open Beach.
Because I have BlackBerry next, and you go into...
I will get that on there.
Google deprecates Gmail app for the BlackBerry. Google said on 11/11... that they will stop offering their Gmail app for BlackBerry. In the announcement, Google claimed that they will focus on building a great Gmail experience in the mobile browser. Now, I'm a BlackBerry user and a Gmail user. I use Gmail on my BlackBerry, but I did not even realize that there was an app for it. I just plugged the Gmail settings into my BlackBerry's email feature, and all works well. I have been using it this way for years. I do not think this will affect the majority of BlackBerry Gmail users, as the majority probably didn't even know there was a Gmail app. So, yeah. That's it. What do you think of that? You're not a BlackBerry guy, are you?
I'm not BlackBerry. It's going down the tubes.
Come on. Although,
you know, I like competition, so I think BlackBerry needs to stay in. You know, even though they're down to, like, what, 2% now?
Yeah, they're third.
Yeah, but they're still above Windows, so I'm I'm rooting for them.
You know what I like? I'm like, and I haven't gotten one myself to check it out, but I did see one a week or so ago, is that tablet that the BlackBerry has.
Oh, yeah.
You can link that to your BlackBerry, and then your BlackBerry accesses the internet connection for that tablet.
Oh, that's cool.
It's pretty sweet.
Is that over Bluetooth, do you know?
I don't know. I didn't get a chance to get it that far into it. I just saw it working. A guy had it in the Panera Bread I was in, and I went over to him and said, hey, I'm kind of strange, and I hope you don't mind, but that's really cool, and I was looking at that, and he told me a little bit about, so that's cool. The extent of my knowledge on that. OpenJDK defeats Apache Harmony in the open-source Java battle. Apache Harmony developers voted to shelve Harmony, which was once the shining light in open-source Java. Things have changed since the project started. Sun open-source Java, Oracle acquired Sun, and then both Red Hat and IBM backed OpenJDK. OpenJDK works and is the home of open-source Java. The Apache Software Foundation has issues with the JCP, which they left in December 2010. Java today is open-source, which it wasn't back in 2005 when Harmony got started. Harmony's failure has more to do with OpenJDK's success, however, than the failure of an open-source project. Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't think Harmony failed because it was open source, or the fact that it was open source had anything to do with the fact that Harmony failed, because obviously Apache does very well.
It does.
Yeah, I just think that the fact that OpenJDK just took off and way surpassed it had to do with the failure of Harmony. Barnes & Noble's slideshow says Microsoft Android patent campaign is total bullshit. A 29-page set of slides made public this week in Microsoft's patent lawsuit against Barnes & Noble lays out in extensive detail how Barnes & Noble believes Microsoft's attempts to collect licensing fees for Android are total BS. The first slide says that this was a presentation given to the DOJ, and for those of you overseas, that's the Department of Justice. It's a federal like legal arm we have here in the U.S. The first slide says that this was a presentation given to the DOJ in July. This slideshow became public this week as it was filed as an exhibit with the International Trade Commission. You can see the slides here, giant URL. Go to the show notes for it. Okay?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And we at the LUG meeting today, we looked at those slides. It's pretty interesting, some of the stuff, some of the points they bring up. Like, they, one of the slides has a comparison of, these are the reasons that you got involved with the antitrust for Microsoft back in the operating system days, and these are the same thing they're doing now in the mobile field, and this is how they tie together, and you're not doing anything. Why? So.
Now, I'm excited for this. Somebody's starting to fight back, because this was a whole, like I said, it's BS that Microsoft's been doing that all to begin with. And then there, it goes on to explain that there's the, for each of those lawsuits that they've done in the past, that there's the, what, non-disclosure?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So they can't even tell us what they were sued over.
Exactly, because even to enter when Microsoft says, hey, you're infringing and we need to negotiate a price for you to pay us for using Android, which Microsoft had nothing to do with developing and is trying to defeat, they make you sign this really elaborate NDA, which just totally stifles anything you can possibly do for development, and it's just horrible. So I'm glad finally that somebody is really standing up to them, like Barnes & Noble.
I agree. And Firefox celebrates 7 years. So to help with the celebrating Firefox's 7th birthday, Mozilla has adopted some Firefoxes, or a.k.a. little red pandas. They're little cubs at the Knoxville Zoo, and they can be seen on a live video stream at
www.mozilla.org/en-us. U.S. is caps. /Firefox Live.
Or just go to the show notes and click on it.
And that would be the better way.
Yeah. The it's a little live video of these little panda things running around, and it looks more like, they look more like, they look like raccoons.
Hey,
there's a couple times they look up.
If you're using Google Chrome and you go to the website, Firefox does pop up a window that says, hey, did you know?
That was my next thing I was going to say. It says, did you know that you can use an open source web browser? That is funny. But yeah, when I was writing the show notes up doing this research, I let that play for 5 or 6 hours. And every once in a while, I'd glance over and see him running around.
Loading Cubcam 360 cute. Give me a break.
So that's interesting.
Oh, great. I'm looking at what appears to be a dark blanket with a red ball. Hmm.
They do run in and out of view, so you don't always see them.
Hmm.
That was one of the other reasons.
How long do we have to look at this black and white picture of a blanket and a ball?
It's black and white. It was color when I was watching it.
Well, I believe it's because it's using some type of an infrared. I believe it might be night.
Oh, that would be it. Yeah. So. Well, going on, Google announces they're going to use a new algorithm for searching. Google recently rolled out a massive change to their search algorithm. The change is designed to return fresher results for a significant number of search queries and highlights just how much power the search industry has over the Internet. The updates will focus on 3 areas, according to blog post, recent events or hot topics, regular recurring events, and searches with frequent updates, like electronic reviews. They do go on to say that it's not going to affect static pages, or business pages. So if you pay somebody to do optimization for your search engine stuff, then, and you have like a static, you know, like if Ford pays somebody to make sure Ford's the first one, if you type in Ford, that's not going to change because the company is sitting there. But if somebody types in, you know, the new Ford Equinox, that's not a Ford car, but like
we only record in Detroit, about 3 miles from the Ford's world headquarters. But go ahead, Tony.
You know, if you say like you want to see the new Ford F-150, then it's going to show the latest blog post about that. It's not necessarily going to show an old 1990 Ford F-150. So it is kind of it's a good thing to bring up more fresher items. And then there's an old Linux Trojan attacking Mac OS X. An old Trojan has been ported to Mac OS X and is terrorizing users of the newest Macintosh operating system, Tsunami. And it's just funny how they're always saying that they can't be, or they don't give viruses, and then there's this old hack out there that is being, you know, hasn't been patched for the new Mac kernels, and because don't they use the BSD kernel as their base?
It's the mock kernel, which is what the BSD kernel is based on. It's older, actually, than the BSD kernel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it is an open source kernel that it is based on, yeah.
Hmm.
And it is Unix, so it wouldn't take much to probably port a Trojan that was written for Linux to it, so.
Yeah.
And again, that's that running as root, because even though they're running a Unix-like system, the operator you're logged in is running as root, so.
Yep. It's that whole being secure or being simple. There's a very fine line.
You know what? You can be secure and simple. And, you know, I give Ubuntu a hard time about it, but they were the first one that really started it. And now that I'm using Mint, Mint's doing it the same way.
Sudo?
Yeah, where there really is, there's the root account because it has to be there, but it's passwordless and everything is done with sudo. And mm-hmm. I didn't dig it at first, but I'm kind of digging it now. It gives me a more secure working environment. And anytime I need to do something, I don't have to drop into a root shell to do it. I can just use sudo.
Yeah, you know, and I'm all for that too. I think that's the best way to do it. But if you think about your grandma, and she wants to, install a program.
Stop. I'm going to throw the BS flag. Grandma is not installing Jack. Okay, grandma's going to use the computer that I set up for her, and if she does, by chance, discover something she wants, grandma's calling me.
All right. But what about my wife's uncle? He's gone through and he's installed Ubuntu on three machines because I showed it when I was out there. I showed him about it, and he was like, he liked it. And then when his XP machines were crashing, he's like, you know, I'm just switching to Ubuntu. So he switched over to it, and I'm excited because I wasn't there. He did it himself, so I thought that was pretty cool. But I don't think he's going to be too excited to have to type in his password every time. He's like, oh, I want to add Google Chrome to this, or I want to add Audacity or something, you know?
It depends. Now, because if he's using the graphical environment and he uses the graphical ad, the graphical system, like I think it's Synaptic, is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. I don't know, because whenever I need to do anything with the apt, I always just drop out to a shell and use apt itself.
Well, Ubuntu uses the Software Center now.
Okay. But isn't that going to, don't you still, it's a one-click install, right? Because it just is going to.
It is, it's one-click.
But you don't have to enter a password.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, do you?
Yep. At least to when you first launch the Software Center, or if you download, like if you go to Google and you download the deb package,
right,
and you go to install it pops up password.
I see, that's not how I do that either, because what I do, like for Chrome, because I put Chrome on because Mint doesn't come with Chrome or anything, so what I do is I just open up my sources.list and add the Google repository to my sources.list, then I install their key, and then I just do an apt-get to install Google Chrome.
Yeah.
So.
All right, but you still have to type in a password.
But I, again, am probably not your basic new user either.
Right.
So.
No, but, you know, I think passwords are good. I really do. It's the way to stay secure.
I do, too. And even Windows is making you do that now. They're not making you write your password each time, but have you used Windows 7 at all?
Yeah.
I use it a fair amount at the one school I do work for, and anytime you want to do anything that's administrator-like, you got to click and say, yes, I want to do that operation. So, I mean, you can turn that off, but only an idiot would do that, I believe.
You're right.
So, which is probably the vast majority of your Windows users out there. And from looking at our stats, we do have a couple free Windows people listening to us, and I'm sorry, but face facts. If you're using Windows, you're not doing it because it's a complicated interface or something complicated to use. You're really not.
There's some people that are are running because they have to have it for work or something. So my option for that is to run a virtual machine. Then you can just open up IE in a separate window to be able to log in and do your work stuff.
See, that's why I love what I'm doing right now, because I don't need to have Windows for anything. Sometimes I have to use it at a client's place, but on my stuff, I don't ever have to run Windows.
Yeah, and that's what I like too.
I mean, before up until recently, I always had to keep Windows around either dual boot or something for RDP. Okay, because up until I discovered Romina about 4 months ago, every Linux RDP client I used worked for crap. It dropped my connections. It was horrible. But Romina, so if you're out there in the Linux world and you need to interact with Windows machines via RDP or whatever, Romina is the way to go. I'm telling you, it's perfect. You can save your sessions. It's a fantastic piece of software.
Yeah,
and they didn't pay me anything for that. Hey, you were talking about this Commodore thing, though. I clicked on this link, and I'm at Anantech, which I guess is who's making the new, air quotes, you can't see them, but I'm doing them, Commodore stuff.
Anantech is just the blog site.
Oh, they're a blog site?
That's
okay.
Where I found the post at. But it's the Commodore USA.
Oh, it is, Commodore USA. Okay. They've got this new C64 Extreme Quad Core out. I'm looking at it, and it looks just like, I mean, I remember these. I mean, I had a friend, and I grew up very, very monetarily challenged, shall we say. But I had this friend who had one of these babies, and I used to go over to his house, and we would get on the freaking BBSs with it and stuff. And I remember how cool it was, and we would write basic stuff and have it run, and it would just be super cool. And I'm looking at it, and it looks exactly like that piece of equipment, but yeah. That's not what it's got inside. Inside, it has got an Intel Core i7 2720 QM, which runs at 2.2 gigahertz and has a 6 megabyte cache. For graphics, it's using the Intel HD 3000. It comes with 8 gigs of DDR3 with a 2 terabyte hard drive. It has 2 USB 3.0 ports. 4 USB 2.0 ports. That's a total of 6 USB ports. It has a LAN port, an HDMI port, a DVI port, a VGA port, a PS2, audio in and audio out, and mic. And it runs Mint 11 by default. Mint 11! Can you get any better than that?
It's only $1,400.
Yeah, $99. That's where I was going next. And then it's $1,499. And that's without a monitor, baby. Yeah. So...
Their,
but it looks really
the
cool.
Previous, the quad core version, or the, I'm sorry, dual core version, that's only $99.99.
The dual core version?
Yeah.
Where's that at?
Right above.
Oh, I'm going to go to the, I'm actually going to click on the website.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, that actually took me back to the same exact thing.
And toward the bottom, it says Commodore USA.
Oh, I see that.
That post.
I got
that's
it.
Their source. But he uses a mini ITX board. And this is a lot of it. You could build yourself. But those mini ITX boards are like $350. So that's probably where...
Because they're doing it. They're really doing it. The whole thing is just in the keyboard, like the original Commodore 64s were. It's beautiful. It's a fantastic-looking piece of equipment. I'm really digging it.
With HDMI, you can set that up as your home theater PC.
You could.
And then everybody's like, that's your keyboard. Where's your computer running this?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a neat little thing, you know, because I remember somebody talking about it the other day, a couple months ago, that Commodore is coming back, and it's the Commodore USA company just got the name, Commodore 64. So it's a name only, and then Amiga also.
Amiga.
It's a name only. It's not the actual Amiga company. They're long defunct.
I'm really digging it because this other one I'm looking at here too. What do they want for this one? The one in the black keyboard. Did you see that one?
I didn't.
What is that? The Vic Slim. They're calling it. I don't see a price for it anywhere on here though. But it's all inside the keyboard.
Even their text on their website all looks like ancient.
It does. It looks like it's a website from 1984 or something. Not 84, obviously. The website. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is really cool.
Were you looking at the Vic?
I clicked on products at the top.
Ah.
And now I'm not looking at it at all anymore.
I'm sleek and stylish, sturdy look.
Yeah, I thought it looked really cool.
Oh, that's the whole computer right in there?
That's the whole computer and that keyboard, yeah.
Holy cow. Oh, that is tiny. Yeah.
Because it had a monitor built into it, though. Wasn't it that, or am I thinking of the old original Apples? I'm thinking of the old original Apples, that it was the monitor and your disk drives all together in one unit and then the keyboard.
Yeah, that was the Apple.
Okay.
That was like the first Apple.
Yeah, the old Apple ones. That's my phone. We're going to hit ignore on that.
All right. So did you see, along with Mozilla, coming out with their latest operating system, and their 7 years...
Mozilla has an operating system?
Or, I meant... I got a little ahead of my talking, or my thinking here. They, along with their latest Firefox... They are actually making an operating system. It's called BTG, or Boot to Gecko. It's based on Android, and you're going to be able to run the HTML5 apps and things like that. So it looks pretty interesting. It has all the stuff you would expect a phone to do, apps and calling and...
So this is going to be for mobile devices,
yeah.
Phones and tablets and things?
Yep. It's all web-based. Or it's a web, so it's using HTML5 on it.
Right.
So that's cool. HTML5 looks huge. I mean, there's so much you can do with it. There's a lot of people. It's going to put Flash out.
Yeah, it's going to totally put Flash out of business. And I have not, to be honest with you, looked at it yet. I mean, it looks, from what I've read about it, as peripherally as I have read anything at all about it, it does look pretty impressive, but I haven't looked at how the code works or anything yet.
Yeah, I haven't either. So. But it seems just about anything you can do in Flash, it's just going to be a standard. No plug-in.
Right, no plug-in required. Just going to work right in regular HTML.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of it with like games you can do online now. I know Google has a bunch of games that's running all in HTML5.
Now, do all the web browsers talk HTML5 now or currently?
The latest web browsers. So Chrome, IE9, and Firefox 8, whatever their last release was.
So they're all up to speed and they're all talking HTML5.
Yeah.
Well, I'm way behind the curve on this. I didn't even think HTML5 was an approved standard yet.
Oh, I don't think it has been. I don't think it is a approved standard.
Oh, really?
Or it's very close to being.
Okay.
But people are writing for it.
Well.
Yeah, I think Google's a big one pushing it.
Oh, I'm sure they are, because...
Google and Amazon.
Yeah, because they want to get rid of Flash as fast as they possibly can. Yeah.
Cool. And then, do you have any projects coming up?
I'm still trying to figure out this PF Sense thing. I was banging on it a little bit today, and actually last night and early this morning. But I was trying to update the packages, and so I was trying to just drop into a shell and do the regular FreeBSD update thing, where it's like FreeBSD hyphen update, FreeBSD hyphen update space fetch, and then FreeBSD hyphen update. Install, I think, are the two commands you would use. And it didn't work. It failed. It found the FreeBSD servers and everything, but then it didn't go anywhere. It didn't do anything. So then I actually read the pfSense documentation. Imagine that. When all else fails, read the documentation.
No.
Yeah, really.
Read the instructions.
So pfSense has a way to do the update themselves, but you got to do it from inside their web GUI.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they don't do anything at the command line, really. It's all inside the web GUI. So I went into the web GUI, and it's very confusing to me how it works, because when I initially did the install, I went into there, because I remembered it then after they said about it, and there's a thing you can click where it says update, right? And then it says, okay, finding the update, downloading the update, installing the update, boom, now you're running the most current thing. And now when I go to that same page, it just says right away. There's no wait for the download. There's no wait for anything, and then it just says downloading, boom, you're running the most current. And I'm like, are you telling me the truth, or are you telling me what I did before? I just don't understand that.
If it's anything similar to the other firewall apps or appliances that I've run, like IPCOP, it's telling you the history of what you've done. Did you look? Is there like a time and date stamp next to what it shows?
No, there is not.
No? Hmm. Yeah, because I know when with IPCOP, it would tell you, you know, like kind of like a log.
Right.
You know, on whatever day you installed this. And then on, you know, the current, it tells you whether there's updates or not.
Yeah, no.
Huh. Maybe it's saying downloading, and that's
No, updating. You know what, though, too? It does it automatically. It doesn't tell you when it does it automatically. Like, you know how Microsoft, if you turn it on Microsoft's auto updates, you know, you can say every morning at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. or whatever, do your updates, okay? And so that's when Microsoft does its auto updates. So this one, you really can't tell when it's doing them, but it says it's doing them automatically. So I don't know. I just have to assume that it's good because I can't figure out how to find out it's not good.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, I was looking a little bit more into my XBMC, and I realized there's a ton of plugins available for it. So I'm going to start messing around with some of those. There's some stuff that looks really cool, and they're changing the way, like there's a weather page on it that you can flip over to that and see all the current weather. And they said they're going to pull that off of the main system and make that just a plugin, so then you can flip over it. So it'll look very similar to what you have right now. It's just... it'll be a plug-in instead. And then it gives you options to choose what weather source you want, whether you want weather.com or Weather Underground or whatever you want to use.
Wait a minute. There's a weather website out there called Weather Underground?
Yeah, it's actually really cool. I use that mainly.
You know what the Weather Underground was, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. But, I mean, the website, it's W Underground, so it looks like Wonderground. But they have all these custom maps where you can look up, and then they hook in with people's their own like little weather machines at each person's house, and webcams and stuff. And so if you want to look to see what what the weather's like on the next city over, and see the storm coming through, you can click on a little webcam at somebody's house, and it shows you, and has a date stamp on there. So it's really cool. You know, we had a lot of bad storms come through this summer, and I was on that a lot.
Yeah, I don't really care. When the storm gets here and starts pounding on me, then I realize that something's happening.
Well, I'm in the basement at work, so
yeah.
That's the only connection to the outside that I get.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, we have a little bit of listener feedback. We have two comments so far on the website.
Slow down, people. Slow down.
So Brad Kelly, he says, Woojie Boojie Sin, I love it. Great podcast, keep it up. Thanks, Brad. So Robert says, aw, it's over already? Man, it sure fits good into my workday. Thanks, guys. And anybody else have some feedback, let us know. We are also looking for somebody to write us some music. Who wants to do some free work for us?
Yes, step up to the plate and say, me, me, me. That's what we would like. We would like some intro music. Maybe 15, 20 seconds is all it has to be. And we have people that can play it if you can write it. But the people we know that can play it aren't willing to write it for us.
That's right. They're players, not composers.
So,
cool.
So, yep. Send that off to us. We expect it by before broadcast next week so that we can get it in there. All right? Get on it.
This is Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis.
And Matt Enders.
Have a good evening.
Or day.
Or morning. Since this is the morning. So we have some outro music by Rob Warren. It's called Rise. Some more of our Creative Commons music, and here it goes.
It's not my idea, but I respect what you need and what you're gonna get. So flag at half mast, and a gentle pain I will bid you farewell and sail again. May be too long, but we've seen some seas, and I agree we need to seek new breeze. So I'm prepared to turn my back and let life compensate. I'm now let go. It's not about the fall, it's about the rise. So it's not about the scars you left me under these eyes. Oh, I found my peace, so I'll hold it close and I'll leave this place you put me without your ghost. Without your ghost. Clear eyes I see, my new show's good. I've been trying to recreate all that I could. So I hold you dear and I won't forget, but this ship is stopping now without regret. Oh, it's not about the fall, it's about the rise. Oh, it's not about the scars you left me under these eyes. Oh, when I realize that it's not about the fall, it's about the rise. Let me rise, let me rise, 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 let me rise, let me rise, rise, rise. When I realize that it's not about the fall, it's about the rise. Oh, it's not about the fall, it's about the